Welcome to Geeks of the North, a hobby and gaming podcast from La Belle Province. This week we record from B-Steve's secret man bunker. We're going to be talking some basing with Yom Nemeshin, and then we're going to have an interview with Mathieu Fontaine and talk to him about his upcoming painting contest at the ND Open. So sit back, relax, grab your paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 70 Geeks of the North. As always, I'm your host Paul Filion, here with my co-host Antoine Bergeron. This week we're joined by Yom and Steve. Hello. Hey everyone, how's it going?
Hi.
Doing great.
You always sound robotic, Antoine. I don't know why. That first hello, it's like, hi.
Yeah, I haven't been speaking English enough before saying that, probably, so.
It's like the deer in the headlights, like, oh my god, he's talking to me.
No!
Yeah, that's the point, Antoine. The whole show is about us talking to each other.
Yeah, so. I know. The rest is usually better.
This is the warm-up. You got to warm up first, right?
Yeah.
All right, so this show, standard format, doing the hobby time, and then we're going into the... You know, there's going to be lots of hobby times. There's four of us. It's going to be forever long. And then upcoming events, the fan mail, the news. And then we've got a segment with this guy called Yom Nemeshin, Super Bass Master. And we're talking about basing. That thing that everyone should do, and most people, or a lot of people, skip on it. And it really takes away from their models. So we're going to give you some advice. Or rather, Yom's going to give you some advice, and we're just going to nod and agree with him.
Because I'm Bassmaster Yom.
Bassmaster Yom, exactly. And then after that, we have an interview with Mathieu Fontaine talking about his painting competition that's coming up at the Indy Open. So with that, let's get this show on the road. And we'll go right into hobby time. Now, I'll lead the charge into hobby time with my... I didn't really do anything. I worked on one model. So I think last episode you mentioned I assembled that whole demon army... for the event that I can no longer go to. So after that, I kind of decided it was hobby burnout time. And I picked up one model out of the army, which was an ancient metal bloodthirster, and started painting that. And I've been working on that for the last couple weeks. And it's coming along pretty well. You know, it's an old model. It really shows its age. So trying to make it look good by today's standards is pretty tough. And I think I'm doing a fairly good job at it. I mean, it won't be maybe display quality, but it'll be pretty high quality when it's done.
I have one question. Why that model? Out of the whole army you had, why did you go for the worst one in the whole list?
You know, you mean worse in terms of looks?
Oh, yeah. not playstyle. Doesn't matter.
You know, I've had that model since 2003, and I've stripped it twice, I think, and I, you know, never really got around to painting it. Because I stripped it once, I didn't strip it completely, so then I had to put it for a drink again, like 10 years ago or 8 years ago. Stripped it again. And it was always on the list of stuff to do. And then, you know, as time went on, that model got uglier and uglier and uglier compared to, like, you know, models of the day. And I figured now, you know, I might as well do it, see what I can do with it, practice some techniques. I actually have an Ultra Forge War Demon on the way that Mr. Yom is going to be contracted to paint for me. So I'll have a gorgeous bloodthirster tape model for the army.
Looks a lot better.
Yeah.
But I can't remember that old bloodthirster. Was it good looking back then, back in the days?
It was okay.
Yeah, back then it was okay.
Because it had two faces. The thing is, it depended on which face you have too.
Yeah.
Right? Because it came with two different heads, and one of them was really flat. It looked like it hit a wall.
Yeah, but that one was... Back then...
Are you talking about the one before it?
Yeah.
Because the one before it was even uglier.
Yeah, it had only one head option, so...
Yeah, and it was all ugly, yeah. So at least my bloodthirster is the one with the nicer-looking head, which is the one with the crazy dreadlocks, which don't make any sense.
The one that didn't hit the wall.
Yeah, but he's got looking like a dog face as opposed to like that flat face. But I figured it was a model that I couldn't help but make look better. Like, there's no way I could screw up and make it look worse.
It's a challenge, right?
Looking at, and I looked at Cool Mini to kind of get some idea what I could do with it, and I noticed that everyone who's painted one of those classic bloodthirsters on Cool Mini has painted it worse than anything I would ever do, so that was a good ego boost. So I said, okay, I'm going to paint it, I'll put it up there, and then I'll have the best looking old bloodthirster on Cool Mini.
Yeah, you will rule Cool Mini.
I'll rule Cool Mini in the ugly bloodthirster category. Oh, we should totally have a painting competition with a category like that.
Yep.
In the best painted, ugliest model category.
I have my old pewter Nagash. I'm going to beat you.
Gary Morley. Don't pull the Gary Morley on me. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, he did the Archeon figure, too. He did a lot of nice figures. I don't know where that Nagash came from.
Probably lost a bet.
I heard that the head
was a joke sculpt that he was
joke sculpt that he was tired of the back and forth they were trying to have him do.
Yeah,
and he just put that and they accepted it.
Yeah, apparently he had a head that he'd sculpted and it looked very gaunt and stuff. And they decided to change the look. They wanted something more skeletal after he sculpted the model. So, in annoyance, he sculpted the clown head, and then they took it. Right. But even if that's true, if you look at the rest of the model, it's not up to the other stuff he's done, so it's really strange. Because the rest of the model detailing is kind of atrocious for the time.
Yeah, but it's old, too.
But it's not that old. It's old, but...
Mid-90s?
Mid-90s, right? Well, no, late 90s.
No.
No, mid-90s.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
Okay, so it was before he did Archeon and stuff. Okay.
It was available in Ford, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay, I thought it was a bit newer now.
I started playing in 93.
Oh, okay. Something fair like enough. That, so. Sorry, my mistake then. I thought it was newer than that. Back to your original point. I felt like I could do something decent with it. I felt like I could try different stuff on it and not have to worry about, making the model uglier. Because I can't. I could run over with my car and it would still look better than what it looks like out of the box. So, yeah, it's kind of a blank slate that I don't have to worry. And it's a low expectation model, right? Because no one's going to look at that and go, well, I expected something that's going to look like a Golden Demon entry from today. No one's going to look at that and expect much. So it was a good wind down model after a year of trying to get an army ready for an event that they couldn't attend. And then assembling a whole second army in a week. Anyway, and the fact I'd mentally prepared myself to speed paint that whole army and then found out I didn't have to do it. It's like, oh, good, decompression time. So, yeah.
That's a good reason.
Yeah, so that's my hobby. I guess we'll go through all the hobby and then we'll go back to games. Or do you want to do it? Perfect. So, Antoine, what have you been working on?
I haven't done a lot like you did. I continued working on my two objective. I don't know why I'm putting so much... Well, I'm not putting that much time on them. I just don't paint enough in the last week. And I am also almost done with my warlock unit, the Dark Elves warlock. So I only have small details like the hooves of the horses, the warlock's eyes, the runes, and probably some glow effect, and some work on the bases. But that's all. What so color? They're almost done. The runes, I still don't know. The glow effect, you suggested me like a cold red. But there's already so much red on the model.
I was going for either purple or pink or cold red.
Yeah, something cold. I need to do some Photoshop test once I can get a better picture of the model with it and see. But I'm not sold on any of those, so I need to test. And that's all I did. So up to Steve.
Well, I've been painting more wood elves. I needed a couple of models done for a tournament I was attending, and that's pretty much what I did for hobby and painting with the help of some Google Hangout session. We did some painting in group by being away, and it really helped me to get through that task of painting those Wildwood Rangers and a BSB as well.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about those.
Yeah,
those were really fun. We all connected on Google. I know other people do it and mention it on the podcast, but it was really fun. We're all painting at our own places with all our setup, so we don't have to move everything. We're comfortable. Okay, same word, but just strange accent. So
it's the strange English accent.
Yeah, yes. Strange English accent. So we're all comfortable, all set up. We don't have to do an hour of driving to get somewhere else, and we're still able to chat, look at each other model with the crappy webcams and stuff.
And so listen to my baby scream into my mic. Yeah.
And you can be in your pajamas and painting, so that's good as well.
Yeah.
Or naked from the waist down. Yeah. You guys will never know.
Yeah. Young could be naked at all, because most of the time he shot his camera.
So yeah. we don't know what he's doing. We don't see him while he's painting.
I'm painting in the nude.
Painting naked. But yeah, I really like those sessions too.
Those artists, you never know.
Yeah, exactly.
But maybe we should try to organize. I mean, we'll continue doing our evenings as we do. But maybe we should try to organize like a big hangout session for us and like listeners and our friends and stuff, and try to do something big. I wonder if it would work or if it'd be completely chaotic.
Oh yeah, if some listeners are interested, let us know by any of our contact info. Let us know and we'll plan something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Sorry to interrupt you, Steve.
That's okay. That's all I've done.
So, Guillaume?
Yeah, me. Ooh, from the last time I went on the show, I painted my Nuems. Nooms? Nuems? I don't know.
I say Nuems.
Nuems, I think is how it's pronounced.
Nuems for the game Relics. So it's finally done, and I think that someone here on this table is really happy about that.
Yeah.
Antoine
is like the official Relics poster boy.
I think he talks about Relics every single episode. Like, it's the best unknown game ever.
I'm pretty sure Tor has a picture of Antoine up in the office, like big smile, like big thumbs up, like holding a.
But seriously, it's a really good game. So anyway, we need more players for that.
Yeah,
game.
I was describing it to my wife before I left, because I said there's going to be a giant section on Relics, because there's always a giant section on Relics. And we planned a game day at my house on the 29th, and the Relics, someone invaded my fantasy day.
Yeah, it's a fantasy day, and what did I plan? Relics.
Okay. So yeah, so my faction is a little sadistic, atrophied dwarves that live in caves, I think, or they were used to. Anyway, so it's really like a creepy army, and they like to inflict pain. And so
right? Don't they live inside a pain suit?
Yeah. Like they have like big armors that hurts them. That's all they fuel the armor, and that's all they fuel their magic. And so I really was going for something like really spooky, nightmarish, and I think I did right.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, they look kind of creepy with all the OSL and the.
And I wanted to put like as many colors on them also, like this red, blue, green, yellow, this all kinds of metallics, so like silver, gold. Yeah.
Lots of blood too.
Lots of blood. That's the red. Lots of blood. So yeah, so they're not nice guys, but in Relics nobody's a nice guy.
No nice guys.
And the other big project was 20 Blood Angel Terminators. So the little painting sessions we had really helped with that, because it's not that fun to paint, I must say. So I tried to find as many shortcuts as I could and something to distract my mind from doing that, because large units I'm not a big fan of.
Remember when I went on my Terminator painting kick and I painted like 50 or 60 of them?
You're crazy.
But you're lucky, because lots of them were the good looking Space Hulk Terminators, so it was less of a chore than like the regular.
What? They have way more details.
But they're good looking.
Yeah, they're good looking.
Yeah, but it's still a lot more work. You remember, it's a job, right? You're not keeping it. It's not for your.
That was for a commission. It's not for your own.
Yeah. If it's for me, that's different. It's different. But when it's commission, I was not supposed to spend that much time on them also. No, the ones from Space Hulk, they really took more time than the standard one. So, but now it's done. It's all behind me. The client seems happy. Good. Good. And I started working on the next projects. I have 6 models for the MVPs for the Game of Dread Bowl. And I have to finish that Blood Angel commission, I have a not sanguineous model from Cyber. It's not sanguineous. It's just like a twin. And that's it for my hobby time.
Okay, so games, Paul?
Yeah, I didn't play anything.
Yeah, it won't be long.
Unless we're counting World of Warcraft.
Oh, but you played something. The new expansion?
Yeah, the new expansion.
Was it fun?
You know, it's just a side note here, because it's not miniature related, but so I thought it was okay. It makes me think of old WoW, and I guess I'm not the only one, because their subscription base jumped 4 million subscribers.
Wow. What literally? Wow.
Yeah, so they were down to about 6 million subscribers, which is still a lot, and now they're back up to over 10. And it was to the point where their servers couldn't, like, there were like 6 and 8 hour long queues to get into the game.
Yeah, I saw someone posting a 12 hour queue.
Yeah, so when I was at last weekend, I was at a LAN party here in Montreal for an event, and one of the guys that I was with was playing WoW, and he logged in. To make sure I get this right, so he logged in Saturday in the late morning, and was in queue, and then we went all day, all night. We drove back to the West Island from the East End of Montreal, had dinner, drove back to the event, got there at 1 o'clock in the morning, and he was still like 300th in queue.
Wow.
So that was like a 12 or 13 hour queue that day. It was crazy. But yeah, so you know, the expansion's fun. I'm trying not to get re-addicted, because I liked having a life for the last 6 months I didn't play. It was good. any real gaming, Antoine?
Relics? Guillaume had painted his new M, so we had to finally try them. So we got two games in, one fully painted at 160.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's all I have painted for my Arknars. And I have even less for my Britain. And so we played the max size we could paint it. That was fun. We were rusted.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the second game we played just a bit bigger at 300 points.
A bit bigger, like double
the points. Yeah, but it's still really manageable and goes quick at that size. So
I thought that game went well and went quick.
Yep.
Yeah.
And but we were rusted. We were lucky to have the...
Rusty. You're rusty.
Rusty?
Yeah.
Okay. We were rusty. So the reference sheet we had helped a lot.
Yeah. You did good on that. I think you made a lot of people happy.
Yeah. The less going back and forth in the book, and especially as we hadn't played for 6, 9 months, something like that.
Yeah.
So we had rules to check. And we also did a post on the Tor Gaming Facebook group, and we went back and forth about some rules that were unclear on.
They used to have a forum with a rules sub-forum, but now it's gone. So when you click on the link, it redirect you to the Facebook group. So we asked the questions there.
Yeah. And some probably were already answered, but other stuff was new. And
That thread got some steam.
And the next game will be... easier and much faster more to go.
Yeah. I won't cheat my way into victory this time.
Yeah.
I totally cheat my way into victory.
No, it probably helped you, but not that much. So that's all I did. So that and some Star Realms on my Android phone. That's it. So, Steve, Mr. Tournament guy?
Yeah, well, I attend the Boy GT and... kind of South Rochester in New York. Played the double tournament on a Friday and the single tournament on the Saturday and Sunday with my Wood Elves. So I did okay. I finished in the top half, which is what I was aiming for. So I'm pleased with my result, and that's pretty much what I did for gaming.
Wood Elves, shouldn't you have cheesed your way to like the top three?
Yeah, I had a fluff army with Wildwood Rangers and 2 3-men. Funny thing happened, though. I 3-whacked the Demon Prince twice in a row. And I killed him. And I almost killed the Great Unclean one by 3-whacking him as well. He was down to 1 wound.
What's 3-whacking? I can't picture that.
It's a special attack that the 3-man has. You only roll 1 attack, and if it misses, it's D6 wound?
Yeah, D6 wound if you miss your initiative. So I'm whacking my way around Warhammer.
Okay.
You can't really say that in English, Steve. It sounds wrong.
I know. That's why he's saying it.
That's what
I know he knows.
I did it on purpose. I'm allowed to say that on your show, right?
You can say whack. Yes. I'm just letting you know that I know that you know.
Yeah. Bands on, guys. Bands on.
It was a crazy venue. Like
it was like a resort, eh?
Yeah, the venue is really nice. It's a big resort. And it's kind of like the mid-season over there, because golf is off and ski hasn't started yet, so that they can get, like, the entire resort is reserved for gamers. So, and... there's a fireplace in your room and it's really cozy.
In the room, not in the hall.
In each hotel rooms, we had a fireplace. So it was good. Yeah, and like a wooden bed. And the rooms are really awesome. And the price is okay for the tournament. And the rooms are like $99 each night. So that's not too bad.
Wow, it's really cheap.
Yeah.
For a resort?
Yeah, exactly. And the pool was technically not open, but some guy decided it was open for him. Bad plan, because the spa was not open, so he couldn't warm up afterwards. But now it's really, you just wake up and the view is awesome. We saw a couple of, you just go to your room and two deers are on the front lawn of the resort. So it was really nice.
Well, I think you posted the deer picture on Facebook or on Twitter or something, right?
Yeah, I did.
And I wanted to go hunt them.
Yeah. John would have made steak with them.
Or jerky. You're the killer.
Yes, I kill stuff.
And so
you killed one thing.
I still did it.
So that's it for my gaming. And this week I took a break from gaming and painting. And I'm going to be back at it next week.
Yo.
Gaming. So, yeah. So Relics felt good.
Yeah, Paul, we can't wait for you to have your invite here done and play.
Seriously,
with us.
Guys. It's a really cool game. Okay, whatever. Also, add a game of, sadly, only one game of Dust Battlefield.
And the other game that you almost trying to get me to play?
Well, it's an awesome game. I don't understand when people don't play that game. So, only one game because we were trying to get a second one, a rematch, me and Guillaume Metras, but we just couldn't. Finally, our rematch is tomorrow. But yeah, it was a mid-sized game, 150 points. I was playing my Axis with a Schwer platoon, which is like heavy, super heavy platoon. And he was playing the Soviets with an all-comers list. So many stuff, like all kinds of infantry, walkers, helicopters.
Did he have the stupid frog sniper heavy infantry guys?
No, well, he had the frog infantry guys, but more like assault with a boarding shotgun, stuff like that. Oh,
okay.
And I just killed
them. Wait, did I call them stupid frog things? Sorry, yeah. Sorry, Guillaume, if you're listening to this. It's nothing against you.
No,
I have a personal hatred for those models.
Because they're ugly?
Yeah, I don't like the look so much.
Maybe a bit ugly.
I actually was thinking about...
they're scary. Yeah,
I was actually thinking about maybe using some AT-43 models to make something like a count as for those.
Yeah, I've seen armies that mix match both AT-43 and Dust.
I'm trying to remember what
they mix really
the SSU
well.
Equivalent in AT-43 was...
Red Block?
Red Block, yeah.
They mix really well.
The Red Block heavy infantry guys would, I think, fit in really well because they have that chunky look.
I think you should add some Carmens to that. Always more Carmens.
So yeah, funny thing, that game I played against Guillaume, I was in the same store and really back-to-back with Mr. Paul here, who was playing Fantasy. He talked about that game on the last show.
Oh, yeah.
Was playing against the Dwarves.
The teaching game.
And as much as their game was serious, our game was just like a bunch of laughs. We couldn't stop laughing because it does Battlefield. It's so cinematic. Like every time you attack, well, it's a first thing is the alternate activation. So you play you don't sit up. You don't sit. And like all the characters, they are like special characters. They have names. They have a background.
Bazooka Joe.
Yeah, so Bazooka Joe. So every time you attack, something happens. It's like you can see it happening. So that's why maybe we really get into the game and we laugh all the time. And it was a really bloody back and forth game. Like I won by the margin.
I remember when you guys kind of ran down the end of it for me. It was hilarious.
But does Battlefield are like that?
That's because you're always playing with Guillaume Metras.
No, I play with other guys too. But
why would you? He's my
main opponent. But yeah.
Yeah, and just in my defense, it wasn't that our game was super serious in fantasy. It's that when you're trying to figure out, for one, I'm not a fantasy rules expert. Right, I'd say I'm like 80% of the rules I know. So when you're trying to remember what the rules are, so you're trying to teach someone, make sure you teach them properly, and you don't know what their rules are or what they're doing or what they're trying to do, it makes for a game where you can't focus on having fun. You have to focus on trying to figure out what the hell's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But all the same, it was a fun game. I don't want to, because Dan may listen to this. You know, it could happen. I don't want him thinking that I didn't have fun playing with him, because I did.
That game was 150, and the next game, the rematch, would be 200, and we'll try to keep going higher and higher. I don't know what the real, the normal the size would be. Yeah. I don't know what it would be.
Do you think the rules break down at a certain point?
I don't know. I never tried to the to a high pointage with that many points. So I don't know, like when the game started to came out, like the rules on the website, because the rules are free, people started playing at 100 points, 100. So maybe people will try to put it to 150. It's not breaking at 150 for sure. So we're going to do 200, maybe try 250, and we'll see when it breaks.
So when I buy my SSU army, I have to buy 300 points just to be sure?
To play with me, yes. I want to play 300. It's really fast, that game, anyway. You attack, you lose stuff, the other guy lose stuff, and you have to move fast on the table. And
I think I need to pick up new dice or something, though, because the dice mechanic's different than Warfare.
A bit, but...
Right, because yeah. There's three different symbols on the
dice. It would be easier to understand if you use the new dice, but you can just use D6 and the standard D6.
Let's buy the dice. Cool. For what the dice costs, it's not expensive. I'll just buy the dice.
Templates are more important than dice. So, yeah, that's it. And also... apart from tabletop wargaming, I also did a bit of Skyrim just to clean my head after the Terminators.
To cleanse the palate?
Yeah, cleanse the palate or cleanse the mind. I wanted to take a bit of a break. I couldn't just start the new projects, painting project after that.
So I want to hire you to paint some Ultramarine Terminators now?
That's me getting out of here!
You need more after the 51st one you had?
You know what? I could give you Grey Knight Terminators. Give you some detail to do, you know?
Like five of them? Five? Like, okay.
Five. There's a five in the number I'm thinking of.
Five squads?
Okay, so just show how much of a orc fanboy I am. In Skyrim, I play an orc, of course.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Maybe that's why I have so much fun with that game. And that's it for me.
All right. So I guess that ends the hobby and gaming section. That wasn't nearly as long as I thought it would be at 30 minutes. We did pretty good, guys. I'm impressed. So why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk... We'll talk some upcoming events, we'll do our fan mail, maybe do the news, and we'll come back and talk to you about basing after that. So we'll be right back, geeks. And we're back. Upcoming events. So I'm going to start this. We've got the Meg Maples Masterclass, December 6th and 7th, here in Montreal at Gamers Vault. So there's still a few seats left. We're at 17 attendees, according to Meg, last time I saw. Covers a wide range of skills. The cost of the class is $205 US, payable to Meg Maples. Class runs from, I think, 10:30 or 10 o'clock in the morning till 7 p.m. on the Saturday and the Sunday. And it's all skill levels. So if you want more information on that, you can go to the Arcane Paintworks Facebook page or her blog and look up the Montreal Masterclass there.
Next up, TempleCon. That's not really local for us, but there's a lot of guys from Montreal going. It's nice for people who don't go to convention. It's a nice entry one. There's 2,000 attendees, something like that.
And I think it's more than that this year. I think
it probably went up again. But it's a nice one. They always have a retro futuristic theme, be it steampunk, diesel punk, or stuff like that. And they have a lot of gaming, of tabletop gaming, be it miniatures game, board games, card games. And their main miniatures game is War Machine and Hordes. So that's why a lot of the Montreal players go to for the whole event there. There's something running there 24/7 during the event. It's in Warwick, Rhode Island, on February 5th to February 8th. And registration are not up yet, but you can already reserve the room. So.
Yeah, and I think this is the first year. I think they've added a day, right?
They added it last year.
Was it last year? Yeah. Okay, because last year was the year I missed. Okay. So I went to 4 days last year.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, next one, Steve?
Well, it's the ND Open, March 7 and 8. And you can still register for 40K and War Machine Tournament. Fantasy is full.
Is there a waiting list for Fantasy?
Yeah, Steve? There's a waiting list for Fantasy, so you can contact directly the email address that you can get on the forum. On the ND forum, you'll see the email address to contact for a waiting list, and there's a form for registration as well.
And they also host the Northern Defender Painting Contest run by Mathieu, which we'll have later in the show. That's it for events.
All right, so let's move right on to fan mail. So Sarah's question of the week. Don't worry, Mike, we're going to get to you in a second. So poor Mike. Anyway, so Sarah's question of the week. How did you come up with the name Geeks of the North?
It was a long process.
Yeah, it took all of about 18 minutes.
No, it was longer than kidding. That. It took
we went back and forth quite a bit.
You had a list like of 25 names.
Yeah, it was longer than that. That's the only the one I.
Oh, that's an address.
Yeah, and we were trying to get something that was catchy, and
but that had a geographical reference.
Yeah, like make it local,
and not exactly wargaming something. So we wanted to be a bit more general.
Yeah, because more because we're originally going to be. I think we are still very hobby oriented, and we're supposed to be less game specific. I mean, we talk a lot about Warhammer Fantasy recently because that's what we've been doing. But I imagine, you know, in relics, lots of relics. With the occasional spattering of dust when Yom's on here. But, you know, the idea is we wanted something that didn't say, you know, Warhammer or Hordes or War Machine or, you know. So. Yeah.
And we had a long brainstorm list, and in the end, Geeks of the North. I don't even know if it was Geeks of the North or some Geeks something and something of the North, and we mixed them.
Could be.
In the end, that's the better one we had. When we got it, it sounded right.
Yeah, it got it sounds nice ring to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're pretty happy with it. That's probably why we used it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's it. No no big mystery, no heartbreak, no tale of woe.
And also, it was available.
Yeah.
Other name we talked about, some were already used for clubs or other podcasts. So.
And there was actually a Geek of the North podcast. Yeah,
there's one with a singular geek.
Mm. Well, he's no longer producing. He's a tech and computer guy. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, in retrospect, it's really good we picked Geeks of the North because it helped Steve and I come up with our team name. For Adepticon?
Yeah. It's going to be Geeks of the Northern Defender.
So yeah, we should get some raised eyebrows at that. It's all good. All right. And, oh my god, I'm going to mutilate this name. And we had one other question from Mike Derspieler. Who had asked us a couple weeks ago, actually, we hadn't really gotten to it. And his question was, what are your thoughts on the trend of incorporating digital apps in
tabletop war games?
Oh, that was okay.
Twigs.
Twigs. I was like, Twigs. Twigs. TTWGS, yeah. And by example, digital rulebooks or aids like the Dreadball app and digitally assisted games such as the new XCOM board game, or Jordan Weissman's new game, Golem Arcana. Also, he's curious if we tried anything out, and if we had any hands-on experience.
So we could probably separate that in two, for digital apps, and after that, digitally assisted games.
Yeah, so I guess we'll look at the aids first. Personally, I think the aids have helped. I think they really can speed up the game. They're convenient to carry around, better than carrying around a pile of books. If you look at the...
If you play 40K...
No. Okay, yeah. If you play 40K or Fantasy or any of the games that have... There's lots of games that have big rule books. I mean...
No, not just big. Like 40K now, if with the allies, with everything, you might need 5 or 6 books just for your army list.
Yeah, so it really speeds things up. And I like the idea of the iPad codexes for Warhammer. Just for the quick reference, like I'm looking at my unit, he's got a weapon, I don't know what that weapon does. If I click on it, it'll take me right to the rules, there's no flipping back and forth. And the fact that they're constantly updated.
Yeah.
So you've always got the most recent rules, which I think is pretty cool. And I use digital army lists all the time now with Army Builder app on my iPhone, or with Quartermaster to build list on my iPhone. I find it's been really handy.
I was thinking also of the Infinity Wiki. It's not about the same thing.
I've heard of that game, I think.
It's not an app, but like the wiki is online, so if you have a smartphone or a tablet, well, it's like you have the rule book in your pocket all the time. It's
better than the rule book.
It's better than the rule book.
Because you can't read the rule book.
No. There's an index, it works. All the keywords are highlighted, and it's different pages, and the facts is incorporated, so... It's better, but to always have that in your pocket, it really helped the game when I started that. So,
well, for my part, I use my iPad with for my army lists. It's always always there, always published, and also for the facts. When you want to search, it's easier to search for a word when it's on your iPad than like reading flip through the pages and everything. So you have everything there. And you can have a copy of all the army books. And if you have a question about the other player, well, you can maybe find it faster than him. And then you can have the answer before him. So I use it more as a gaming aid than for the app. As for the app, I know that Game Workshop did a psychic one, I think, for 40K with the spells and everything.
Yeah, I think they have one maybe for tactical objectives. Which
I'm surprised Yum didn't pick it up because it has sound effect in it when you cast spells. So
would save me the trouble.
Yeah, exactly. It would ruin your fun. Does the sound effect for you?
No, it's all. Yeah, it's part of the fun. Come on,
Antoine. What about you?
I don't own any tablet. So I do have a smartphone. So I. Sometimes I do carry a list with me on it, but most of the time I'm probably always digital paper and not digital.
You're so analog.
Yeah, so analog. But I do use a lot of I do read lots of PDF rule books, but I don't carry them with me in stores or stuff.
And you own all those rule books, right?
Oh no, that's no. We're not speaking Game Workshop. I'm speaking company that do offer free rules.
Yeah, so companies that do that.
Yeah.
Everyone else.
That's about it.
Yeah. Actually, I say that, but PP doesn't offer free rules. They just have affordable rules. Yeah.
Outside of that, I know of some board games that have associated apps for timers or stuff that's not the game, but that's helping, and like. I'm drawing a blank. Space Cadet Dice Duel. It's a time game. Or not Dice Duel, but Space Cadet the base game, which is a time game. So they provide a timer with a sound effect for the game, and it runs itself instead of having to use using a send timer that's never precise and always clogged or stuff like that.
The new Star Wars RPG game, because it uses special dice, also has an app. So you don't have to buy the dice, you can just use the app to roll.
Yeah,
and it's the same app that does the dice for X-Wing. And so that was neat.
Yeah,
so, and I think
those I think can be useful. There's also chess clock apps that we use a lot for War Machine.
I was going to say Mantic just published one, I think, for Kings of War, along with a couple other specialized apps for Kings of War.
Yeah, I do use a Warpath? No.
War Room?
War Room a bit for rules reference for War Machine. But I don't own any of the decks. So I only have access to the basic rules. But still, that's useful because when you don't have a copy of the rulebook with you, you're still able to reference some of it. A big part of the basic models you have from the base books are available. So
I don't have it. I should get
that. So it's
a useful app to have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it for the, like, we tried to do the whole this matchup building thing, and that seemed clunky and weird.
Yep. Like you can write damage. But yeah, like all the chest lock, and that's like free apps you can find it.
And they have a chest lock app in it. But you also can find a free one on the web. And for the rules reference, it's really useful. But that's about it for digital aids. I don't really use them. I'm not against them. I find them useful. I just don't have the opportunity to use them.
All right. And what about digitally assisted games? Have any of you guys played any digitally assisted games?
No, I like the concept.
Yeah, I tried a very, very quick trial of Exilis back in the day, which I think was the first of the digitally assisted games that we saw. And while it was a neat concept, I felt it kind of took away from the experience. It didn't feel the same to me.
It played too much itself.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, I play miniature games because I want to play miniature games.
There's a good point about it, but it's still like the soul away.
You know, there was no rules arguing. Like, the game just kind of resolved everything for you, and I was pushing models around on the table. It was almost like playing like Final Fantasy or something, right? Where, you know, I press a button, my guy does what I tell him to do, and then something happens, and I get told what happened, right? It felt like it was missing something.
Yeah. We haven't, Mike mentioned Golem Arcana. We didn't try it at Gen Con, but I heard good reviews about it. And it was compared to Exilis in part. And some of the flaws Exilis had don't appear in Golem Arcana. So it's supposed to be good. It still doesn't attract me. Not the models. The models looks fine, but just the I'm not in the concept. I'd like too much having paint the hobby side and the
physical side. We're old school hands-on gamers.
Yeah, Luddites.
We're Luddites. Yes, that's exactly what I'm used to being called.
Yeah, the guy that we both worked in computer.
Yeah, exactly. And we're
Luddites. Yeah, that's funny. But that's about it. I don't have any other experience with it, with any of those games.
How about our illustrious guests? Nothing?
No, I already said that I don't like the concept. Takes away from the game, from the feeling of the game. I play miniature games. I want to know the rules. I want to think my strategies. I don't want a panel. I want to think about it myself. I want to roll the dice. Or flip the cards. It depends.
Steve is nodding, which makes good radio. No,
I just said, I'm not too... if I'm using app or something, it's just like... complete, but not something like to play the game for me.
It's an accessory to the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
More reference than something that replays the game.
Yeah. So, I mean, and Golem Arcana look cool in the sense that the idea is that you take the pen, wand, whatever you want to call it, and you can get information about an opposing model by pointing the wand at the model, and basically it'll read the RFID tag on the model and it'll tell you about that model. That may help you make better judgments. I think it's less automated than Exilis was.
Yes, it did a lot less.
Because I think they actually took... I mean, everyone had that feedback about Exilis, right? That it was too on rails. So I don't think it was hard for him to look at it and go, maybe I'll do this, but just not do everything that everyone hated about that game.
Yeah, if people want to hear a good review of Golem Arcana... you should. I don't have the episode number, but D6 Generation did a really good and full review of the game. So it's an interesting listen.
Cool, yeah. So definitely I'll have to check that out and see. Because, like I said, the models look cool. The game's a neat concept. I saw the Kickstarter. I was kind of curious about it. We saw it at Gen Con. We walked by several times. The booth always seemed to be busy.
Yeah.
So I think the game is being at least fairly successful. And I would imagine it's targeting a lot of people who are just trying to get into the miniature hobby, maybe from video games or something else. So it's like a gateway drug. So it's in that regard,
transition game.
Exactly. In that regard, I approve of it. I'm sure we'll see more of it in the future. It'll be interesting to see how it evolves. All right. So I guess that answers Mike's question. And again, thanks, Mike, for sending it. Sorry it took us a little bit to get to it. But we figured there'd have to be some discussion around it, and we're pressed for time in the other episodes. That being said, we're going to move on to news. I think maybe for the sake of being quick, we'll just everyone will list off their stuff instead of going around the table.
Good.
Do you think it works? Yeah, okay. Well, I'll start. So I just had a couple picks, nothing much. So I saw that Spellcrow launched some new stone bases for fantasy. So I'm thinking they're 20mm and 25mm square. I'm getting strange looks from Steve.
No, it's okay. I didn't know that, so I'm going to look into it. That's
okay.
It's not strange look of you're telling stuff wrong. I'm strange look like, oh, I need to check this out.
Well, I think it was just released maybe today or yesterday.
Yeah.
And they're small square infantry bases. I can't remember if it's 6 or 10 different sculpts. But it's interesting. It's just like a broken stone floor. It looked really nice. So that's worth checking out if you're looking for some square bases for some infantry. And the other thing I want to mention is the Mantic Kings of War 2nd Edition Kickstarter. Which, of course, like all Mantic Kickstarters, we want $20,000. Oh, look, we're going to get $200,000 in the first 5 minutes. Because we're Mantic. And we're going to give you the kitchen sink and, you know... Our grandchildren, that's the Mantic style. Very, very lucrative Kickstarter from a gamer's point of view. If you want to start a new fantasy army, this might be the time. So basically, second edition is supposed to flesh out the rules to add more depth to them. People who haven't played Kings of War, it's worth checking out. The premise is that the models, like the big units of models, act as one model. So they have one health pool, one stat line, whatever. And... you know, you don't pull models off the trays. The models stay on the trays because the creator of the game is like, listen, you know, the whole point of having these big fancy armies is they look awesome on the table, but then half your unit dies and half your army goes, you know, into a box on the floor. So we want to keep everything on the table.
And they wanted also to be quick.
And
removing a whole unit at a time is far quicker and easier to set up again.
Yeah, so the game is pretty streamlined and it's very tactical. In a different way than I would say Warhammer Fantasy is.
Yes.
But they want to add more to it, right? They want to make it more interesting, add more details. I think they're adding a campaign system as well, if I saw correctly on the Kickstarter. And so they have, I think the base pledge level I want to say is around $50 US. And that gives you the hardcover second edition book and a softcover small format book to carry around with you.
Yes.
And then up from there you have...
Army pledge.
Yeah, the army pledges, which give you either a starter army or a couple starter armies or a massive army. And, Mantic's really come a long way. With this also, they're launching their new demon army, the Abyssals, I think they're called. Is it Abyssals?
Yeah.
Abyssals. And they make me think, I mean, they're kind of cartoony, as with a lot of the style from Mantic stuff.
Cartoony demons.
Yeah, like imps from Dungeon Keeper or something. Like, Yeah. It's a cool style. I like the sculpts. It doesn't look like anything other people have done, really. You know, and I think Mantic has a lot of cool sculpts. There are a lot of not-so-nice-looking sculpts either, let's face it. But everyone starts somewhere, right? I think every army they've released has gotten better. You know, if you look at their dwarves, their elves. But if you look at more recent stuff, like their ogres, I think their ogres look cool. Their goblins look cool. The Basileans, their angelic... the Army of Humanity type thing, I think looks pretty cool. Steve apparently doesn't like the look so much, but that's okay. The models, I think, are still nicer than what they did previously.
Yeah, it's better than what they started with, but I'm not a fan of their model.
That's interesting. I'm curious, what didn't you like about the Basileans?
The angel guy?
Well the angel models themselves are kind of okay, but I think their infantry look really good.
I didn't see the infantry. I mostly saw the angel models. I saw them in person. And I don't know, they kind of look flat.
Yeah, I agree with Steve. I'm not a big fan of the Basileans.
Really? Interesting.
I think they lack detail. They're too plain.
Interesting.
Other armies, I think they did great. Those.
I'm going to take another look at them from that point of view, because I looked at them when they launched actually at Gen Con last year, and I almost picked up a bunch of them. I didn't really notice that. Maybe I'll take a second look and try to see what you're seeing. It could be interesting. Well, it's always interesting to have another person's point of view, right? I see a lot of models. I own a lot of models. I maybe just didn't see what you saw. Yeah, so that's it for my news. Antoine?
Yep. First, Burning Design released Dagger's Reach, which is a line of MDF terrain for a whole medieval town, even with city walls and stuff like that. They're Burning Design do affordable terrain most of the time, and they do playable stuff. So all the heights and the size are made to be able to be usable in the game. The wide enough to block line of sight, sturdy, but enough details that it doesn't look just like flat pieces. So their western line is really good, and that new Dagger's Reach one looks sweet. So that was my first item. And the second one is...
And there's a big modular castle as well in their MDF line. So if you want, you can buy lots and lots of parts and do a big castle at the center of your game. And I think I saw like removable parts that can crumble or something like that.
Yeah, so the walls have like sections. Like you can take a section out, look like the wall's been crumbled.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. They have good stuff. Next, Shield Wolf, who did the Mountain Orcs, plastic orcs with the really savage faces. They just released two new models. Well, in fact, they're not models, they're busts. A Goblin Warrior and a Demon Warrior bust. They look really, really good. And they even dropped the price during the first week because they had bad feedback about the price compared to other companies. It's their first bust, so they tried something, and I think they're pretty affordable for their €40 for 6 inches high bust, which is pretty good.
They're big.
So and they look really, really good for busts. I
really love the Goblin one.
Yeah, the boat looks good good. They're really interesting. So that's it for me.
Okay, actually, I just want to mention one other thing because it came to mind. Speaking of busts, Cromlech just released a Orc fighter pilot bust.
Yes, it looks incredible.
Yeah. Which looks amazing. Yeah, so kudos to Cromlech. I'm mentioning this for Yom.
Cromlech. Yeah, all the orcs. All the green skins.
So much cool stuff, Cromlech.
Oh, okay. I had another one, but I shifted it to Steve because he also mentioned it in the Facebook group.
So I'll try to be quick. First thing, unless you live under a rock, Games Workshop is going crazy on Tyranids. I'm not sure why, how they explain the timing, like let's go all Tyranids all of a sudden. Anyway, so... good for you if you're into that. After that, there's the Northgard Kickstarter that I wanted to mention because there's something particular in that Kickstarter is that the orcs are the good guys. I always said the orcs were the good guys.
They had that in Chronopia too.
They were lame, but this one are cool. They're like paladins or stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna check this out right now.
But they look a bit chaosy. So I was maybe looking for someone who would back that up so I could add an add-on like a
Orc Warlord. Why are you looking at me, yo?
I don't know. I'm just looking at the wall behind you. But I think they look amazing and just cool to have the Orcs as good guys finally.
Is there a game around this or is it just a bunch of
monsters? Yeah, no, it's a game. It's a game. It's three factions so far. I've checked a bit how it works for the combat mechanics. Looks okay, like looks a bit like just complex enough but simple enough also. There's a bunch of videos that you can watch on their Kickstarter page. Kickstarter ends in at the end of November. Like I said, three factions so far, so they are evil humans, barbarian demonists, so they make a pack with demons. They're like wildlings making a pack with demons. And there's an alliance, the third faction, Unlocked only recently, was an alliance of dwarves and werewolves. And the werewolves, they look a bit like wolfens from Confrontation. So,
oh, nice.
And everybody, I think everybody loved the wolfens. They were really good.
They're some of the nicest models from that one.
So, and the dwarves, they have an interesting look.
That's the alliance of the crows or something like that?
Bat.
Oh, the bat?
Yeah. Okay. But the models look great for all the factions. the mechanics looks fun enough. But well, I was, yeah, looking. I'm just happy about the orcs.
So looking at the Wolfkin models, though, speaking of models that look a little flat and lacking detail, the preliminary renders, I mean, the faces look good, but the bodies and the armor look pretty flat. So hopefully we'll see some painted examples.
Maybe once painted.
Well, it's tough to say. 3D renders, they can mislead you both ways. Sometimes you think, oh, it's going to be amazing. You get
sometimes there's too many models, too many details, and when they do the actual master or the Riscold, it doesn't look great.
Okay, those orcs look pretty freaking awesome.
They look awesome. And they're big also. They're all in 40 millimeters base. So they're big.
How much is a pledge?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not cheap, though. This is not cheap. Well, starter box actually $45. Yeah, it depends. Okay, no, it's reasonable. Yeah. It's reasonable. Yeah.
For Kickstarters go, it's okay. So
rulebook and starter, $75. So very reasonable. Okay.
Also, they're already funded, by the way. They're just trying to get the stretch goals. Last thing, Fantasy Flight is using the Thanksgiving Black Friday to do a big clearance sale of their Dust Tactics and / Warfare inventory.
It's not the only thing. Almost all.
They have a big sale with lots of things. I'm just happy that they're trying to push, but like the. Okay, they have different sales with different rebates, but for the Dust stuff, it's really a clear out sale, like 75% off. 75% off.
Yeah.
That's a lot. They want to. Really want to get rid of it. And for those that know what's going on between Battlefront and Fantasy Game, that Fantasy Flight game, it's a good thing that they finally do that push, because Battlefront cannot do anything with Warfare as long as Fantasy Flight has a stockpile of models, because they cannot devalue their stuff with new books. So it's really, they're stuck in limbo. If they really push that sale, that's going to be great. So it's until the start of December that you can buy. It's a good start, a good time to start an army. The main drawback is the shipping is a killer.
Yeah, it's tough.
But I think that, but it doesn't scale up the shipping. Like, it goes higher if you add more stuff, but like the rebate is so good that if you combine with some people, you can.
I wonder if it'd be cheaper to ship to the States.
Oh, probably.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Do
a
freight forwarder?
Yeah. The Americans are pretty happy with that sale right now, because they don't pay crazy shipping.
Yeah, so worth looking at, especially if you can use a free freight forwarder, like Freeport forwarding or whatever, to get the models shipped there and then just bring them across the border.
Indeed, Paul. If only I knew such a guy. And I'm done. Okay.
I'm trying too hard.
I didn't say anything. Steve.
For my part, I don't have much news. Well, there's the third book of the End Time series from Game Workshop that's coming up not this coming weekend, but in the next after. So probably in the next weekend when you listen to the podcast.
Yep.
Correct?
Yeah. So yeah.
So the next weekend it's coming up. It's going to be all about elves and the civil war between high elves and dark elves.
No,
and they make peace.
It's not clear if they really make peace.
More like they make pieces.
Was it a misunderstanding?
Pieces, probably. And so I'm really excited about that.
It'd be nice if we can actually get a couple copies.
Yeah, they sold out pretty quickly last book, and so hopefully we'll be quick enough to get some copies. And the other thing I have was the Fallen Frontier Kickstarter. It's a reboot of the canceled campaign from this summer, and they're already funded, and there's around 2 weeks to go, and now it's all for the stretch goal and everything. So, but it looks really good. Models look amazing, and
yeah, the Rift, like the more close combat oriented ones. I really like their Berserkers. They look really good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they are unlocking a new faction, fourth faction. I think the stretch goals too.
The Harvester. Yeah. I think they're as we recording, it's now to $90,000. So think it's Sunlock. Yeah.
So what did they change that suddenly made the Kickstarter successful?
They didn't have all the faction up at the start and unlock them, so they were able to lower the price. The
initial price.
The same thing Dead Meat should have done, probably.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that was Dead Meat's... Well...
They're not done yet, but...
Yeah, it looks like they're done.
Yeah.
They'll relaunch it. They already said they will, so... I think the big challenge there is that you had to buy two factions at once. I think that's a lot of people. If you don't like the second faction you're going to get in that box, it's tough to spend $100 on something you don't like.
Yeah, and the goal was
really
big.
Was it 80?
80.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, $80,000 goal to even get the product made.
For a company that never did miniature games.
Yeah, that'll discourage a lot of backers.
And not a license, so there's nothing attracting people there. So,
yeah, regardless of the fact that it the mechanics looked really interesting, and you know, if you listen to the show with Ryan, it was well thought out and he'd done tons of playtesting. I have no doubt it's a good game, but tough to convince people to back something like that.
Yeah.
So that's it for news for me.
Well, I guess that's it then. So that's it for news. So we're gonna take a quick break, guys, and then we're gonna come back and talk about basing with Basemaster Yom. All about that base.
Mm-hmm. No trouble. Getting to first base.
Getting to first base. Well, I see where Yom's going here. Okay, guys. On that note, we're going to take a break. See you in a second, geeks. And we're back, guys, with Basemaster Yom, world icon, national treasure.
Oh my god. Okay.
Sorry, guys, at Skull Bros, I stole your line, but it's, you know, you'll forgive me.
So what? I'm up?
Oh, yeah, you're up. The segment's all
you. I thought you were kidding.
No, I'm kidding. Okay. So,
because we all do bases, right?
Yeah, so I know.
I'm
just teasing you. You're an easy target, and I'm in that type of mood.
You're getting to second or third base, at least.
I'm lucky if I can find the base at this point. I'm looking at our show notes here. Just, you know, friends don't let friends not base their models. But you know what? And
it's kind of true.
It's true, because... It makes a model. It gives it that finished look.
Yeah.
It makes it visually appealing and eye-catching, and you can use it to tie in multiple models that may not have, you know, I'm thinking again of a demon army or something, right, where you have multiple different color schemes, multiple different looks, but the bases tie all the models together into
ties
a pure
up the
army, right?
Yeah, and complete and enhance the paint job. That's really important. It's a balance that you need to find with every base. That you don't want something too plain, unless you do rank and files, of course. But you don't want something to overshadow the paint job, like not something too complicated, too grand, and you won't see the model. So,
you know, we saw a lot of that when the Nagash model came out, right? We saw a lot of the Nagash on a sand base, and you're like, well, that's kind of a waste.
Yeah. Yeah,
but then you saw some great use of basing, like. The Nagash with the Garden of Moor.
That's the best one, yeah.
Right, which was...
Such a good idea.
It was a busy base, but it wasn't busy to the point where you're like, I don't know what's going on and why, you know. It wasn't distracting.
It respected the theme of the model also.
Absolutely, yeah.
With the spirits coming out of the Garden of Moor.
Yeah. And basing is another way to express your creativity, right? Because you can do anything with it.
Yeah, normally I think they're fun to make, but... You have to find, like I said again, the right balance.
Okay, well, where do we go from there, guys?
We're going in all directions.
It's getting late. We're running out of steam. It's a good thing we recorded an interview earlier. Like we said, we can pretty much go anywhere. Yeah.
So, from where do we start? So,
well,
basically,
there's kind of two kinds of bases. We can start from that, like. Homemade and the one you buy from a supplier.
Oh, like, you mean like a resin base?
Like, yeah, like resin sculpted base. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the start.
Yeah.
Like, you decide, do you want to do do-it-yourself bases or go the routes of buying bases for your army and choosing a style from different store and things like that. Yeah. So
see what products they offer and the complexity of the team you're looking for also. Like, you're doing a forest army, like a wood elves army. You want like tree trunks and a lot of vegetation.
Yep.
So you want
foliage.
You like, you want a foliage and tree trunks. Maybe it's too complicated to do a whole army with that. Maybe you want to buy some resin bases. But if you want to do something like a snow army, so snow team, so just rocks and snow, that's pretty basic to do. Don't buy resin for that. Can do.
You know, I actually bought some resin bases for snow. Well, it was for, I'm trying to remember the name of the game, Malifaux. I had a little arcanist, what's her name, Rasputina?
Rasputina.
What are they called? Not war bands. Gangs?
Crews.
Yeah. And the snow on the bases, I mean, they were kind of, the rock part looked fine, but the snow just looked like someone had melted the bases.
Mm-hmm.
It was the saddest, most depressing thing ever. Like, I just spent $20 on bases that looked like someone melted them on the heater.
And I have to say, I bought some desert bases
for my next example. Don't do desert bases.
No, but it was just for the bigger model with, like, details and sarcophagus and
okay, so there's like, stuff in there.
Yeah, stuff in
there. It's not just a textured not sand just looking
bit. Okay. I have some of those.
There's some nice desert bases with the small dunes.
Yeah, dunes. Yeah, that's what I have. It's not just plain with just sand or.
You know what makes a nice set desert base? Heavy gear. Heavy gear, I mean, their bases are an odd size and they're hexagonal and whatever. They're not really useful for anything else. But they have a nice desert texture base that it's unfortunate that we can't find a way to use. I'm not really bashing on heavy gear. Stop laughing.
For what?
Antoine's giggling over here because I can't compliment gear on anything, apparently.
But yeah, their bases are cool.
Okay, that's true. I haven't seen them, but
yeah, they've got a cool like dune texture to it. It looks like, well, not maybe dune, but like, you know, when the wind blows across the sand, you have like the ripples in the sand.
Yeah, okay.
So it's that, and it's got like a couple of little bones and stuff. It looks really, really cool.
I still think that the more complex the base, then you go to resin. Otherwise,
yeah.
Well, it's not just for complexity. I think it's more for repetition. Like, if you have an entire army, you want to base with the same style, you're better off with resin because you're going to get constant result rather than trying to replicate that by yourself.
Depends what it is. If you want something really simple, like for all army, maybe you want just something plain like flock and sand just to... And like your rank and file models. Like a whole orcs army. Maybe you just want to glue just some sands and some static grass and that's it.
Yeah, and for huge army, you'll have the problem of repetition. Because you want them to look coherent, but they're, most of the time there's 10 different for each side. So if you have, let's say, 150 Skaven, you'll see the bays repeat themselves.
Yeah.
So I think the custom-made route is better than that in that case.
Yeah, yeah. I have my Ultramarine army is based on resin bases. The bases are fantastic. Secret Weapon makes some great stuff, and that's what I'm using for that army. But the 10 sculpts, right? And I think one or two of the sculpts for the city bases have little piles of bricks on them. So you can see like every 5 Terminators, there's a little pile of bricks, and yes, I can position the Terminator differently on the base and turn the base to try to make it look at, but really there's only so much you can do.
Well, you could also not have 50 Terminators.
Yeah, but I still understand what he means.
Yeah.
Okay, that's when you get 10 different, because when I did my relics, I had 5 different.
Yeah.
So to mix match, okay, this unit, I'm going to use 5 different, but not twice the same because I want to use them on the other unit. And I had a small unit, so I was kind of lucky with my only 5. So. But the important thing is to, I don't know you guys how you started, but when I started painting miniatures like 17 years ago, I was just doing the, it was the green base.
Goblin green base.
With the flock like,
everybody
on top.
Was doing that.
Yeah.
Some models, I didn't, never even glued some flock. It was just
goblin green.
My high elf
army last year was like, I was happy like that.
It was a green base, not goblin green. It was like a dark thornwood green, I think it is, from Privateer Press. With flock on the top, multicolored flock. That was it.
Yeah, that's the classic bases.
Yeah, with the green
retro
edge.
Yeah. We were happy back then, just with that. Just like an old ugly bloodthirster was beautiful back then.
The famous red period.
Yeah, and just a level over that, you have the bases where you do just like you said, you glue some sand. And after that, add some either flocking or static grass. That's already a step over the old style classic goblin green. And it looks good. That's what I use for most of my large armies.
And you can glue, just like find a color of sand that you like and glue that sand. Or you can glue that sand and paint it also. So you have more control over the whatever, over the exact color that you want to give that base.
And... So. If you're in Quebec right now, it's time to go to your local hardware store and buy a huge pouch of sand for like $2.50 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have that sand for during summer.
During the summer.
Yeah. So it's the time to buy sand.
The coarse sand for
ice and stuff? Exactly. And with that sand, you can either like use it straight like that and just paint PVA glue on your base, dip it in a big... container and then shake it and remove the excess sand, or you can use something to like just remove the coarser sand and like make a really really thinner texture. So
dollar store strainer I find works good for
if you want to go through that trouble, or just buy a finer sand.
Yeah, you can buy finer sand in most aquarium places.
Yeah. Don't even have to go to the hobby shop. You can.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You don't have to. Because if you go to like a pet shops or something like that, you'll get the same kind of sand, but a lot cheaper.
And some craft stores also have sands, different colors of sands, to do like sand sculptures or stuff like that, mm-hmm. like sand bottles.
Okay.
So that's another place you can find it, not to...
And these kind of things that like the flocking 101, like the basic list of things that every hobbyist must have, like a selection of different sands, different rocks, PVA glue to glue them on, like find tree barks. Just when you take a walk, just be aware of what you can find, tree barks, different rocks.
Yeah, the world is filled with textures that you can use on your models.
Seriously, when I take a walk, I always check it on the ground, and sometimes I just feel like a little bag I have on me. But stuff I picked up.
Be careful if you pick up rocks. Don't take too heavy rocks to put it on your base, because it's not that good to use like huge rocks.
No, I've you have to figure out when you look at the rock that you want to pick. Would it fit in a 40 millimeters?
Yeah, exactly.
25 millimeters? Or something like that.
And one thing I tried when I was starting, it's not good. It was crush sesame seed. It's not a good idea.
What? Okay, that never
heard. That try to do a tan texture, like to replicate. People are giving me weird looks.
The weirdest I had heard before that was cat litter.
I never tried that.
But
I've read.
Well, horrible. Cat litter at least looks like coarse stone, so I can kind of see.
Yeah,
it.
But
I wouldn't use it on a base either.
Sesame seed.
Yeah.
You just at least you didn't try spreading peanut butter on the bases for texture.
It doesn't work that good. Just so you know.
Another thing,
couscous has the same has the right texture though.
Oh yeah, could work.
In a previous episode, we were talking about like using tree barks to replicate rocks, mm-hmm. and how to fix a model on it. I just wanted to point out if you use a real rock. You remove the peg from underneath the model, and with super glue, it will stick to the rock. You won't believe how strong the bung is. It's really strong.
Because the rock is porous.
Yeah, it's really strong. You can shake the model, and the rock won't go. You don't do it, but I mean, it's really, really strong.
Yeah, rocks are porous, so crazy glue will bond them really well.
So you have to find, just look at the rocks, you can find something like, it has to be flat on both sides, obviously, and not too big to fit on the base. But you can really put like a character, either a unit champion or something like that, or a warcaster on the rock. It will make him stand higher and he looks more important.
True line of sight, you know.
Stupid rule. other stuff that in hobby shops, you can buy static grass. Or flocking products like tough grass turf. From Army Painters
The tufts, I was gonna say, for static grasses and flocking products,
woodland scenics,
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You get big containers of it. It's not too expensive. There's tons and tons of different textures and colors and whatever, and everything from static grass to clump grass to mm-hmm. clump foliage. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And for those products, you can also find like all kinds of products that will replicate nature, like vines or stuff like that.
Yeah, like lichen and stuff.
Yeah, lichen. Meg Maples was talking about using real moss that you can find outside. You dry it, obviously.
Yeah.
And nothing looks more real than actual moss.
Most of the woodland scenic moss is real moss.
Okay.
That's dried up. Yeah. Oh. So, and okay. Something else for the base, instead of sand, there's some modeling putty.
Yeah.
Valeo have some modeling paste.
Yeah, acrylic paste.
Textured paste with like pumice.
Not only Valeo, but you can find it at the art store more. You can find huge pots for just a couple of bucks.
Yeah, it makes something that looks more natural than sand, because most of the time sand is a bit coarser,
mm-hmm.
too coarse for a base.
If you want to see for a beautiful fine sand of desert sand of water.
Yeah.
Instead of buying them resin, I'm just saying.
And there's also a laziness factor too, right? Like sometimes it's easier to buy resin and pay the money than to start making bases sometimes.
But then you have to pin all your models.
Like I said, this depends on the complexity of the bases you have to do. Like, I'm doing a Neverblight army. I started that project 2 years ago. But it's like snow base, so just rocks that I found on side. And so I glued the rocks on the bases.
That's the pink army, right?
Yeah, that's the pink army. And then I use epoxy paste to replicate the snow, so I give it some shape. Also, I don't just block the holes, but I give it some shape. And then I use the snow I use is from Andrea, but there's different kind, I guess, you can do. So I have my little recipe to do the snow. Basically, it's just I put PVA glue, I put that product, and then PVA glue would mix with the water on top of it. So in the end, it looks it's a beautiful snow, and I mean, it doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, I've tried some snows, the GW one, and I also tried the Woodland Scenics one. I thought they were awfully coarse. So I think it was finer.
It's not that it's finer, but when you put the mix of PA and PVA glue and water on top of it, it will even out the level surface. It out.
Yeah, that's true. That makes sense. The other thing people use is, and this is, be very careful, but some people use crushed glass.
I started using it. Be careful, because you don't want crushed glass in your lungs or underneath your fingernails. So when you rub your eye two hours later, you get some in your eye. But yeah, it's an interesting product, not easy to use to get a good result. Mathieu Fontaine, that we will have later on the show, he did a really good diorama called Blood and Snow. You can check that out on his website.
That's an advanced technique, though.
Yeah, it's more advanced. Advanced crushed glass. But it's interesting to work with. Yeah. I'm still in the previous, prior steps of trying to get my hand on it, out of it. And like we said earlier, for the a rock is really porous, so the glue will stick to it. When you do your own bases, strip your bases, the surface of your base, of the plastic base that comes with the model. Like, sand it or... use a coarse paper. Use a knife to strip it. Drips. Yeah.
Yeah, just to give it texture so that the glue can grip better.
Yeah.
Do you make Here's a question. Do you finish all your bases, then glue your models to the finished base?
Depends.
Yeah, same here. Depends on what I'm doing. Like, a lot of my rank and file stuff, it's the model's glued to the base, and I sand it, and I paint around the feet. You know, it just depends on
when I find a sand that I like the color of, I will glue the model on the base, paint the whole thing, and then glue the sand. Like, my Orcs army was like that. But lately, I do the base separately. So I will do... And I prefer to do the paint models and bases. So I will start with all the bases to get that out of the way. So I will do many, many bases in one shot. And then I will take care of the models that will stand in their own corks. And when I'm done, then I fix them. I pin everything in a way.
Well, it's because you're the base master.
Yeah.
I've heard of this pinning thing you speak of. I can't say if I use it very often, but...
You don't?
No, I'm lazy and sad. I'm a sad panda.
I was getting tired of hitting a model and the arm fell off.
I bring a bottle of crazy glue everywhere I go. No. Seriously, I don't... I mean, it depends, right? I don't... Because most of my models are glued to the bases first, a plastic model to a plastic base, it's not going anywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A ResTic model or a metal model to a plastic base, well, that depends on the base, depends on how it's together. You know, the old GW slot of bases with the metal models.
No, that's not a problem because you have the slot.
Exactly.
You still have a peg underneath the model, but when you want to do a custom base, you cannot keep that, so you have to remove it, so... Now you only have two feet, depending on the size of the feet. In a case like that, I'll pin. If it's not going onto a rocky surface, because on a real rocky, you can't have good luck pinning through that. But
or like one of the challenges I had was a lot of my fantasy armies recently, they've been using the magnetic bases from Shogun Miniatures. Now that's a layer of a magnetic material with a plastic layer on top, and what I found is that the plastic on top doesn't really seem to melt with regular plastic glue.
Oh, it's not the same plastic
as the Game Workshop bases. So the bond isn't actually that good.
Oh.
So I've had to go to crazy glue, but those bases you cannot pin to, right? You'd have to try to build up to do. So I'm using crazy glue. So I etch the surface with an X-Acto and I crazy glue the models down. So far, I've had good luck, but sometimes you do what you have to do.
Yeah.
Magnetic bases. Magnetize your bases.
For full army armies. Game?
Yeah.
Can save you a lot of trouble.
I can't imagine. I tried playing fantasy without using magnetic bases.
When I started it, I didn't magnetize my bases. It was a nightmare.
I always had magnetic. I always used the Shogun stuff, always.
Yeah, or you can do it yourself. You can buy, magnetic sheeting.
If you plan to do an army, you can go in excess like I did. And it's much cheaper, to buy a huge roll off eBay than trying to buy, separate sheet from, Gale Force 9. They have A4 sheets, and it's going to cost you, $15, $20 for 3 sheets. And I bought my roll, it was 2 feet by 10 feet, and cost me $40 or so with shipping. Okay. So
you can base...
Yeah, all your armies. Even I think I can do all of Paul's miniature thing.
And that's not a small feat.
Yeah, exactly.
No. That's a good option.
We should try to test this at some point. Just roll out the sheet and put my models on and see if we can cover every square inch.
We could. But another thing, even for if you play a skirmish game or not only for army game, a big army, I would recommend putting magnets and magneted sheet just for transport purpose. Yeah. Like you're going to the hobby store with your car, you just have a tote with a metal sheet at the bottom, put your mini there and they won't move, they won't break, and you're safe and sound when you arrive at the place.
And you save a lot of time deploying also your army, because you just remove from the box, boop, in your regiment already made.
Well, there's that army case, right?
It's got Table War.
Table War, yeah. It's got the glass sides and the metal trays inside.
Yeah.
Yep. It's done for that. They even sell rings that go around the bases to be able to do displays.
Yeah.
With the right size hole for the bases.
Oh, nice. So, I didn't know that. Learn something new every day.
Yeah, so it makes carrying displays. So it's a pretty cool idea.
I wanted to add something when Steve talked about the role of the magnetic sheet. What I did for my orcs, I would just a lock like that. I walked into a staple store, like a Burwango, and they were selling, to stick business cards on the fridge, just like a magnetic sheet like that. So they were having a sale of that. So like a box of a pile of like 100 sheets. Little sheets for $5, so I bought like 4.
Yeah,
and so I could base all my orcs army, and I still have more. Yeah. So you have to be on the lookout for stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, like everything hobby, right? You have to always keep your eyes open.
Yeah, you never know when you'll find a treasure.
The dollar store, store is like the best place ever for like random miniature stuff from fake plants and stuff. Look at talking about basing, but you know, toy bits and.
Yeah, and even like if you're doing big models with diorama, Christmas is around the corner, so you go out at the Boxing Day and you can buy stuff to put under the tree for half price. So probably you can find like stuff to do scenery for your bases really cheap.
Yeah, well, it's like I was looking at the Arcane Paintworks blog recently, and Meg was talking about using a Christmas clock tower piece she'd gotten for like for a Christmas village or whatever, and she'd repainted it, was using it as a scenic base, looking for a model to put on top of it, like a statue, you know.
That's nice.
So yeah, it's all about the, you know, keep your eye open and was it what'd you say in the notes? Scavenge everything.
Scavenge like it's going out of style. Like always keep your eyes open.
And not just for the base stuff, because for big armies, you don't want to do that, but like your Signar armies, all your big models or your centerpiece model, they have bases that you added stuff on, like the electric box, your Thunderhead.
Yeah.
So you pimp your base.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the next step after doing nice bases with.
Keep everything always be on the lookout. It's the same rule. The Thunderhead, my big warjack, the base is like pieces from a City of Dead.
It looks like a recharging station.
Yeah, make it look like a recharging station. So I use like a lamppost to be like a, I don't know, like charging like battery. I don't know. It's like a glass cylinder with charging electricity. And I use City of Dead pieces to build like a platform. And also I use guitar strings to be like power cables.
Yeah, that's the guitar really useful. Strings,
So make friends with a musician. my brother-in-law is a bass player. So I always ask him, hey, do you have some extra bass cords that you don't use anymore? So I have an endless supply of
old strings. Nice.
Yeah, and they look really good. And you have different size. If you go for guitars or basses.
Yeah. So from really small to kind of big, because for miniatures models, it's kind of big. So yeah, so always be on the lookout for everything.
Yeah, and to complement what Yom was telling, like when you're after doing the basic for your base with the sand and flock and static grass, whatever, you can always like add, you go through your bits box and like a sword, an arm, a head, or anything that could like just add to the look and feel of the model, and you could put it there. Like leftover arm could always go with on the base of a demon. Like just put some blood, and there you go. You instead of having plain base, now you have an action scene.
Yep.
Keep all your bits. Yeah,
yeah.
I mix and match two warjacks at some point for my Signar army, so I had an extra border that you have in the back. So when I did my Ely 1 conversion, I was looking for something for her to be stepping on, because she had like a weird pose. And so I took the extra boulder and she's like stepping on a destroyed boulder from one of her warjacks. So it makes a story and doesn't cost anything, because I still had the piece.
Yeah. Yeah, you had a piece in your bids box, so
keep it pretty.
Oh, that reminds me, I forgot your bits again.
Oh, it's all right.
Yeah.
Next time, look forward to another project.
Something else for the texture we didn't mention before, but some companies do texture stamps. So there's negative texture on a silicone pad. So you can just put putty on your base and press the pad on the base, and you'll have a texture like me. And some are pretty elaborate, like planking, streets, or
cobblestone,
sci-fi decking, anything. So the two I have in mind are Apisepuku and Basius. They do different styles, and that's a great resource to do a whole army. Most of the time, the pad is like 6x6 or something like that. So you have a different texture on it. Let's say a planking pad, you'll have different width of planks and land.
Yeah,
and
so every time you press down somewhere place, in a different spot on the pad,
yeah,
you'll end up with a different base, right?
So it's a nice start. If you want to do army-wide custom basing, that's a cool one if you want to do something different and just
cost-effective, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
very, very cost-effective.
And it scales to any kind of bases, like if you have a 50 mil round or square, you can use that because it's since it's just stamping for a texture. So
yeah, that's useful. I have a bunch of Apisepuku one, and they're really useful. I even use them for some terrain, not just for bases, but you can use them for terrain pieces too. So.
And also you can use, to do a similar effect, to copy like pieces from a model, you can use InstaMold to replicate like a dead soldier or anything, or a texture
from a build. InstaMold's a great product. Yeah.
For a small texture and everything, for bases, it's really good for that.
I did that for my Rivet Wars diorama. Yeah. I copied the back of one of the... one of the little rivet, the little fighter, and put it face down in a mud pile, a mud flak.
Yeah, he was face down dead in the dirt, right?
Yeah, so I just copied the back of him, recasted it in resin, and I have something for my diorama.
It was just looking like the real thing, you cut off one real model. For my NUEMS, I did make some seppuku. Apisepuku basing technique with InstaMold data, because I bought some biotech bases from that back then, they were from MicroArts. So I mixed the two techniques to do bases from some of my NUEMS. So the sky is the limit.
Yeah, and the stems, they also have accent stems. Some of them are only like, instead of being a whole texture, it's only parts like pots or like cabling or
manhole covers,
mailboxes, like
stuff like that.
So you can add cans. Details to existing bases with those, or you can reproduce almost anything if you use instant mold. So you can even reproduce if you have a sheet of like a brick texture that you bought from a company like who do the
Plastruct?
Plastruct. You could copy a part of that and reproduce it on another basis by doing a custom stamp.
Good.
All right. Is there anything else we need to cover on that?
Well, back on maybe resin bases.
Right.
Because they're not all the same quality.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
First thing, like anything resin, you would need to clean them. All right, people?
Yeah, wash.
Soak them up. Okay.
Wash them with some soapy water first.
Yeah. So I've heard people like soaking them for a long time, like a week.
It depends on the mold release being used.
Exactly.
Some of the stuff just doesn't come off with a light scrubbing. You need to really like let it work.
I have my suspicion that that's the case for MicroArts products. MicroArts Studio. They're not my favorite. Anyway.
Something else. The companies have all resin bases, but there's also some base inserts. Some company do base inserts, like... there's a bunch of them from Cool Mini in their Dark Age line. So it's just the top that you put on an existing basis, like all the round lips are just a bit indented. So you have small bases that don't just clipped on top of it. So they do that. Cool Mini ran a Kickstarter with Micro Art Studio.
I backed it, so I'm really happy because I'm...
Yeah, for a bunch of inserts, they almost redid their entire line in plastic inserts now.
Yeah. And different, like, there's a lot of different resin based style you can go with. So some of them are shallow.
Yeah. Is
that
it?
Shallow that you can fill with resin. So the
to do water effects or
yes, yeah. Effects. So the bottom is like a gory with skulls and stuff like that. So you can add like blob and
yeah, it's got a bit of a base into it. Yeah. So you can add like realistic water or whatever.
There's a lot of options, lots of possibilities. My favorite, I have two companies that I really like the products, so I'm gonna give them a free plug if you don't mind.
No, of course not.
It's Dragonforge Design and Secret Weapon Miniature.
That's the two I would have mentioned first, yeah. Too. So.
Yeah.
I
think they make the best resin bases.
Yeah, Secret Weapon, I use a lot of their bases. MicroArts, I also have some of their stuff, too. I haven't really had any problems with it in terms of mold release, but my stuff is older, so maybe they've changed their mold release, too, so it's hard for me to say.
It might have dried, too.
Oh, that's possible.
I find them, like, really oily, hard to clean, and they stink. No, they really stink.
Like the smell?
Yeah. Hmm. Like since I pin stuff, all my models, if you drill through one, it really stinks.
Remember, folks, you wear a mask too when working with resin.
Yeah.
Actually, what a lot of people do is they work with the resin, they keep it wet. So when they're sanding, if you use wet sandpaper and stuff, you don't want any dust.
No, I don't. I don't sand them.
No, but some people...
But you could with wet sandpaper.
They can wet sand. If you wet sand it,
okay,
right? Or if you keep your base wet while you're working on it...
There's no dust.
There's no dust, right? Okay. Because it's wet. So,
right.
Just a...
No, I bought myself a mask when I started doing airbrushes.
Oh, yeah, we have masks.
So now I wear my mask all the time. Don't take any chances.
Darthy home.
Another company I want to mention for resin bases, it's Basics of War. They have bases and scenic bases, but what they do as well, they do movement tray that you can customize to match the base that you choose. So it really complements the unit. And I've seen it, like I saw in flesh, I saw the rat for Skaven Army, and I saw... the one for kind of Tomb King Desert team army. And it's really nice and it's a bevel edge and everything. But it gives you more work because you have more stuff to paint as well. So if you kind of go through your base quickly, it's going to ruin the model you took time to paint as well. So you have to be careful not to put too much. But if you want to put it that much... Just do it all the way and put the effort into painting that as well.
Yeah, find the right balance, like
we were saying. Exactly. Dragonforge as well. I've tried them and it's really good product.
Yeah, jumping from resin bases to something else, we already talked. We talked about different static grass, and someone mentioned the Tuff from Army Painter.
Yeah.
It's static grass that's already glued, but it's not all the same length. So it's like small. That you can just pick from the pack and add it to your base, and it's already all done. It looks more natural than static grass, and they have a bunch of colors. They even have some with flowers or different themes. So that's Meadows a great product to use.
And even though it's kind of pre-glued, you have to glue it.
You have to glue it, but at least they're glued together.
Yeah, exactly.
And Game Workshop did some. I think it's Game Workshop. They did some. But it's just static grass glued to a plastic pieces. Okay. It's really, really not the same effect. The army painters are a lot better.
Also, another little tip: PVA glues, it comes in clear color, so no color.
Yeah.
Because when it dries up, it will leave a residue, like the white PVA glue can leave a white like layer. So when you do snow, it's okay, but when you're trying to glue some tuff like that, yeah.
I always use crazy glue to glue down my tufts.
Yeah, I use crazy glue as well.
All right.
But I didn't actually...
You just have to be careful because when you have two small pieces, sometimes your finger will stick to the base.
I've also glued my finger to the tufts, yes. But I was going to say, I didn't actually know that PVA glue came in clear. I've never seen that.
Yeah, me neither.
Where did you get it?
Staples.
Staples? Okay.
Well, to check that out then.
Free plug for Staples.
You almost all about the advertising.
No, but because you don't only glue flux with it, like, or you can do large amount of flux. You don't want to use crazy glue or super glue for that. So that's my opinion.
Okay.
I think that covers it.
Yeah.
I think we pretty much did everything. So yeah, folks, let us know about your bases. Is there any technique or product you use that we didn't mention? Anything interesting? Let us know.
We did talk about acrylic paste, right?
Yeah, we talked about sandpaste and stuff, yeah. Okay. So yeah, if anyone knows something we didn't discuss or has a suggestion, something we could add to this list of product, let us know. And on that note, I think we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back with our interview from Mathieu Fontaine. Be back, geeks. And we're back. And now we're joined by famous painter Mathieu Fontaine. Hello, hey Mathieu. How are you?
Good, yourselves.
Can't complain. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Today, we're having you to talk about Norton Defender Painting Contest. But before, can you introduce yourself to people who might not know you? There's not that much, but just in case.
That one person somewhere that doesn't know who Mathieu Fontaine is?
I'm sure there's more than you think, actually. As you said, my name is Mathieu Fontaine. I'm a professional painter. Basically been doing that since I was, 15 years old. I've been painting armies to play with at first, then discovered I actually enjoy way more the painting aspect than actually playing the game. So, converted to full-time painter. I paint both for commission work, either tabletop or display quality. That's basically it. Won quite a few awards here and there. I've been giving classes all over the place. I think that sums it up.
And we're going to talk to you about the class at some time in the future. So just a fair warning.
Okay.
Good. So now that we know more about you, can you talk about the painting contest? It's the second year you're running it, right?
Officially, yes. Unofficially, it would be a third year.
Okay.
3 years ago was kind of a running phase, just getting the sense of how Northern Defenders worked. Never attended that event before, so I just want to get a feel out of it. So we did run a painting contest without much publicity or without pushing it too much. Last year was basically our first official year, basically sort of whole process of where I want to bring the show along the next 5 years. So we're implementing basically a few steps as we go, sort of year by year. So yeah, last year was, as we can say, the first official one with a lot more publicity. We came a bit late on the publicity and trying to get people come to us. This year we started way earlier. Hopefully we're going to get stuff running much more in the next few weeks as well, in order to get much more participants this year and in the year to come.
But you still had a good turnout last year.
I was absolutely surprised, actually, yes. I was hoping for a few of my friends from the U.S. to come down and actually boost the quality of it. All of them canceled for various reasons, which kind of bummed me out until I actually saw the quality of entries we got. I tend to forget sort of how many good painters we have in Quebec due to the lack of a group of actually painters associating together here in the province. But yeah, I was actually sort of really aptly surprised by the level of actually sort of entries we got. Was actually sort of, a nice thing to have.
Yeah, well, I remember you had that gorgeous Space Marine entry that I think took first place, right, if I recall correctly. Wasn't there a single model Space Marine purple, well-blended, gorgeous?
Well-deserved.
And then
it's actually on the banner of, on the Facebook group right now. It's actually painted by Andrew Wrong. It was actually gorgeous. It actually won the first place for the single category.
Right.
And the best of show was actually awarded for an orc by Thierry Husser.
Yep, I remember that. And then there was that ugly big model from Hordes there, the Mountain King thing. That was pretty hideous. Yeah. But I it was nice that you actually put that up anyway.
Bribery was involved.
And for anyone who doesn't know, that was painted by Yom. So I'm just ribbing him a little bit because it was a gorgeous model, too.
No, it was actually sort of really, really nice work. Sort of nothing more to say about it.
No, I was happy that you could give me pointers of what to fine tune about that model. What I could have done better. That was nice to just talk to the judge after the competition and get pointers.
It's always a question to try to understand what department is actually looking for. A lot of guys that come and see us after a contest as judges want basically us to simply tell them, good job, congratulations, you should have deserved better, which is not the case, because otherwise we would have given it to them, which is a bit sad. But after that, it's always a question to try to dissociate the painter from his work for him to be able to see the quality as an objective viewer, which is not always an easy thing to do. But yeah, from that point on, we can actually sort of start developing on what needs to be done for the next time, what can he work on, and stuff like that. If I take basically the Mountain King as an example, so it was a really, really nicely done pieces, but I think it was actually done as a commission work, and actually, if I remember correctly, he told me he had to stop at one point in order to make sure it was still, you were still coming to you money.
Indeed.
Which is a nice thing to do. But compared to the two other pieces from Andrew Rung and Thierry Serre, it lacked that kind of finished feel to it. It was a bit rough at a lot of places compared to two other pieces, which were actually sort of near perfection. So yeah, it's sort of, especially in these type of contests, it's always those small details that come into it. But yeah, you always need to remember sort of why the piece was done for. I know a lot of the commission pieces I'm doing are not finishing entirely up to the standard I would like to, but at one point it all comes down to actually sort of making sure you spend the time you're actually paid for and not going over and basically lose money out of it. It's sad to say, but that's what it is.
It is hard to adjust to that.
Yeah.
You always want to push more, but you have to remember that you must not give too much. You have to remember what you are getting paid, yes. But no, also, the thing that goes with it's good to have you giving pointers, but you have the other guy who wants to get to the next level, he has to have the, I don't know, like let go of his ego to be able to be acknowledge as, yeah, that he can do better and that he's not at his max already.
It's really hard to be objective about your own work. And that takes that takes a certain level of professionalism that a lot of people just don't have, right?
It's the same one. Every time I enter like a major competition, like let's say Golden Demons of in the UK, I can judge every single category and I usually have a really, really good feel of what's going to be on the podium, except mine. As soon as I walk into the cabinet of my own category, I think that everyone is better than mine. It's simple as that, and I end up winning gold or silver or bronze whatsoever. But yeah, sort of, I can be objective for any single category except mine, where I basically think my thing is crap and everything else is better. Don't ask me why, it's always been the case.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of us are like that too.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly don't paint to your levels, but I think everyone's hard on themselves.
Can you relate to that?
Or it goes both ways, right? They're either hard on themselves or they're the exact opposite and they're not objective enough. They're not hard enough on themselves, right?
Well, at least on my side of things, I'm always happy about the results. If I always think I'm going to lose and I end up winning, compared to the guy that I always think is going to win and end up losing. So yeah, it's good.
It's hard to complain when that's what's happening, right?
Exactly. Sort of.
Now I would like to talk about the format. Last year you had more of a classic format that we see in other painting contests, but this time you're changing that to an open format. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Last year we followed the classical podium format. So basically you have a bunch of categories. You have third, second, and first place for every one of them, and that's basically it. This year what we're moving to is something we see much more often in those more historical-oriented shows, which is an open format. The main difference is, first of all, there's no more categories. We got rid of that. What the participant will do is actually sort of enter a display of their work. So what they will basically do is bring the miniatures they want to present as a display. So instead of having tables with actually sort of all the singles model at one place and one of the vehicles at the other place, we're going to basically have small areas for each painters would be able to actually sort of display their own work. From that point on, what will happen is me as a judge and other people that's going to be working as judges as well will determine which piece out of the display is actually the best, all right? So basically, if you enter five miniatures, we're going to actually sort of come as a group of judges and actually sort of debate which one we think is the best. And from that point on, every judge is going to be using that specific piece for an evaluation, all right? From that point on, sort of, it's basically sort of a system of grading. And you're going to be receiving sort of an award according to the level actually you have. So instead of having to choose basically one gold, one silver, and one bronze per category, what we're going to do is actually sort of attribute a level to every single painter, which means if you're a decent painter, you're exploring different techniques, and actually sort of your level is going up, you might actually sort of end up with a bronze or a silver, all right? But actually there might be three or four or five other people who actually with a bronze and a silver as well. So we're not limited to basically sort of one gold medal and one silver medal and one bronze medal. What we're going to do is actually sort of, instead of having only three prize per category, we can actually award per the level actually you've achieved. So if you're really high, let's just sort of Thierry Hussard and Du Wong, which actually had the two best pieces last year, will most likely walk away with a gold, all right, both of them. So there's no more differentiation between first and second, all right? As anyone else actually under that might actually get a silver or a bronze. So instead of actually sort of having a format where people compete against each other, they compete against themselves, all right? Usually what people do is if they got a bronze last year, they come back the following year and the goal is actually getting a silver this time or actually going all the way to the gold. So instead of having sort of that kind of cutthroat decision to be made for first, second, and third, we basically sort of can actually walk in and evaluate the level of the painter without actually sort of having to basically pick and choose which one we think actually is the best, which often comes down to these subjective choices.
So how many pieces can people enter?
Any pieces you want. It's...
So there's no maximum number?
Nope.
Okay.
Just picking nope. The
well,
best
obviously,
one.
If you bring sort of 50 pieces, we might ask you to limit down for a question of size. But usually what people do is they bring the letters for stuff they're actually the most proud of, and that's it. Sort of a lot of people actually bring boxes and actually kind of a black drape or something made of velvet and actually make a nice little sort of stand for all the miniatures to be sort of presented together. It's a totally different experience. But the point is, it's actually bringing people together. So instead of actually sort of trying to compete against someone else, you compete against yourself. So you're more open to actually to discussion with others and actually discover what the other people do and actually exchange on different techniques and actually sort of exchange on the various aspects of our hobby.
Okay. So let's say painter X bring five pieces and
yes.
You look at all of them, you find which one you find is the best. And
yes.
That's the one you're basing the his rating on. But that's
exactly.
Compared to other pieces in the show or not at all?
Not at all.
Okay, so you find the best one in that painter list, and after that you judge it based on a global quality level to be able to give a bronze, a silver, a gold, or nothing, maybe?
Well, not everyone's going to walk out with a prize.
Yeah.
Well, it might as well as everyone going to walk out with a prize. I don't know. It always depends on what people brings and actually sort of exhibit. But the way it works, as you said, sort of, we're going to choose the best piece out of your display sort of, as discussed among the judges. And after that, sort of, every judge is going to come sort of, through every single display, turn by turn, and actually evaluate that piece as a reference. I'm not too sure yet on the details of actually how it should be graded, but a lot of places actually work on a system of 0 to 4. So basically, as a judge, I look to your piece, and I'm going to give it a grade from 0 to 4. All right. So basically, a 4 would be a gold, 3 would be a silver, 2 would be a bronze, 1 would be sort of congrats, see you next year, and a 0 is basically you might have work to do. from that point on, so an average would be done among all the results of the judges, and that would be actually the final grade.
Okay.
So basically, if your average comes up to 4, it's a gold. If it comes up to 3, it's a silver, and there you go. Simple as that. Well, simple as that, yeah.
It's always so simple.
I feel more management for me this year. Yay.
Yes, yeah, so
I was going to say, make yourself a lot more work.
Yeah, but actually, I'm not judging the armies this year, so that would be much more easier.
Oh, okay. So you can focus more on the contest. And
yeah, I'm supposed to have minions doing the army judging under my supervision this year, so.
That's good. You're the head some
minion.
Help.
Good.
Yeah, so I always love minions.
That's a completely different format from what we see usually. Have you entered a lot of those?
Yes, I did, actually. So it's a different format than what we're used to, actually, as gamers.
Yeah.
But as miniature painter, it's actually a format that's been out there for years. Actually, per the press at Gen Con, their main painting contest actually follow a similar format.
Yeah, I entered that this year.
Yeah, I was going to say the Gen Con format is similar to that.
Gen Con, no, I think they still go by third, second, and first, but the Gen Con main event But the Proto Press event actually goes in the same format. Yeah, basically you get a bronze, silver, or a gold, depending on sort of how good they think you are. And then actually give one first prize to actually sort of per category for the, I was to say the scholarship, but no, the prize money. There you go. We'll be doing roughly the same. We're still going to have best of shows for best single, best unit, best monster, best vehicle, or war engine, and best of open. And then one global best of show out of the entire show. But yeah, there won't be specific categories anymore. That's gone. That was actually to be implemented in the early years, just to make sure that actually we bring it more to levels of what people are used to see around. I mean, the more general painters, not the gamers. Because actually, I want this contest to actually sort of go out and actually bring a lot of people from outside to it to get a really nice exposure and actually sort of get really, really great painters out there in the next few years. Hopefully.
That's a good goal. The level, as you said, in Quebec is quite interesting. And if we have people coming from outside also, it's going to just be a better contest.
Yes. And actually, so that's kind of a void right now. So in Eastern Canada, there's no more contests going on. There used to be one in Montreal that basically kind of collapsed a few years ago. But I thought it would be actually really important to bring something back. And Northern Defender was actually was the right option.
Cool. Anything else you want to talk about, the rules for the how to enter the contest?
The rules are fairly simple. You bring whatever you want to bring. It must be actually painted by, I would say need to be painted by you, but someone else can actually sort of bring your own work over there. Basically, there's not much rules other than that. So bring your stuff March 7 and 8 in Quebec at the event. Form a display and we take care of the rest from there. Simple as that. So as I said, so there'll be special prizes for the best of shows, both single unit monsters, vehicle and water giant, and actually the best of open, which basically open will include dioramas, busts, anything that is not included in the previous categories. There's no differentiation in scale anymore. Basically single is all the way from 50 millimeter to 90 millimeter if you want. Yeah, actually from 90 millimeters, sort of anything above 90 millimeters, basically it's kind of action figure, stuff like that will be actually judged in open. For the best of. But otherwise, yeah, there's no more kind of scale differentiations. There's no difference between sort of historical or fantasy theater. A lot of the open contests out there actually usually basically sort of puts sort of historical on the side and fantasy on the other side. We're going to have none of that. It's all about painting miniatures. It's all about the same thing in the end, so everything together. And finally, there's two special awards, which are actually already announced on the Facebook page. Obviously, the first one is the best of show, obviously, for the best figurine out of the entire show. And the other ones are the Prix de la Citadelle, which hopefully are going to start picking up this year a bit more than last year.
Yeah.
Well, actually, last year we had something to give to someone who actually took the time and actually the attention of actually making sure there was something, which was nice. But yeah, the Prix de la Citadelle is basically a theme award, which we find a lot in different open shows. Ours is actually sort of any... We actually awarded the best miniature depicting actually the rich military history of Canada. So since the event is actually in the military base, we thought it would be important to actually pay tribute in some form. I also announced today that the best of show for best weathering is back, sponsored by Secret Weapon Miniatures with a nice little trophy. And hopefully I should be able to sort of announce a few of these special prizes in the weeks to come. There's a bunch of discussion here and there. So I don't want to say anything yet because there's nothing set. But as soon as I get confirmation, yeah, obviously we'd be sort of announcing them on the Facebook group.
Well, so more to come on top of that. Maybe more to come on top of that. That's cool.
Yeah, and I think you posted pictures today of the secret weapon trophies for the weathering contest.
The same as last year.
The bricks. Fun.
Yeah. The medals we'll be back this year for the best of show as well, like last year.
Good. So people who want to enter, do they have to be there all weekend or can they only come on Sunday if they want?
They can come on Sunday. Basically, the schedule is as follows. Entries will be accepted on Saturday, March 7th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. We're going to accept late entries on Sunday morning from 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. We can't accept any later than that in order for the judges to make actually sort of do their work properly and take pictures of everything as well. Your display can be picked up starting on Sunday at 1 p.m. So you cannot come only on Saturday. Unfortunately, unless someone's actually sort of picking up your stuff, some of them are going to need to work on some paper form to be signed just to make sure there's no theft or something of that sort. And something else different as well, the award ceremony will be at 2 p.m. on Sunday. instead of actually waiting for the entire tournament to wrap up and have the results and then actually do our own prize ceremony, we're going to do it at 2 p.m. on Sunday to make sure that everyone is able to leave early time and actually be able to drive back home. If anyone actually in the contest is actually in the tournaments, we're actually going to sort of keep the prizes and give it to them once the tournament is over. So we're going to stay on site just to make sure everyone get the prizes as they should. But everyone else only coming for the painting contest won't have to wait for the entire tournament to be over. By 2 p.m., actually at 3 p.m., everything should be done. And actually, the room is going to close at 3 p.m. So there I go. It's $15 per participant. So basically, you can bring as big a display as you want for $15. If you bring the figurines from someone else, it's $15 per participant. So you need to actually bring $15 for that person as well. Simple as that. And yeah, that's it. Location, it's at the Valcartier military base at the officer's mess, just like the tournament is, as usual. But that's basically sums it up. Yeah.
And another thing, this year you're going to have your room for the painting competitions completely separate from the tournament. So
yes.
People can go really for the painting and chatting with the painter and chatting paint without having the gamer in their way. So you're going to have really a room for the paint.
Yeah, we should be kind of in the cafeteria room, if I remember correctly. Basically, sort of, it would be alone, it would be quiet. There shouldn't be too much bodily odor as well as last year. you won't have to walk all the way down to the judge, actually to the organization table at the end to actually be able to try to see all those miniatures in two small cabinets. Everything would be displayed on the table, so really wide open. Better lighting as well. But as you said, yeah, sort of, it'd be much more quieter. You won't have the hustle of the tournaments going around, so you'd be able to just discuss actually sort of miniature painting without having to yell or actually sort of talk louder. Nothing against the gamers, it's just it's two different feelings, actually two different feel, and we just make sure sort of everyone is able to have a nice time, a nice chat without actually sort of having to yell or get out with a headache.
That's good. Mm-hmm. If people are there only for the painting contest, not for the tournament, will you have tables available for people if people want to paint, maybe?
We could. From my own experience, people usually don't paint at these places. They rather talk and just enjoy, especially at the officer's mess, but there's a nice bar on the side with a nice selection of different products. it's really convenient for chatting and actually sort of discussing. But yeah, sort of obviously in the years to come, we're going to probably implement seminars, stuff like that, sort of different painters talking on different subjects. This year, I'm not sure I really want to get into that because first of all, it would probably mostly be me this year doing it. so I just want to make sure that I've got everything locked down and sort of everything runs smoothly before I actually sort of try to free myself to do a seminar. But yeah, probably next year, sort of, I hope to sort of be able to start implementing seminars, stuff like that with different painters.
That's really cool. That would be a good formula. Like you chat with the other painters, you follow some seminars, you participate in the painting competition. That's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
That's
interesting. Cool. I'd definitely be there for seminars.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you're not playing a game.
Well, I don't play competitively, and I don't enter painting competitions. So, but I take classes. So, yeah.
But that's the other thing I want to stress as well. Sort of, a lot of people sort of last year basically were telling me, so there's no point for me to enter the contest because I have no chance of winning, which in a lot of cases is actually true. A lot of the guys actually came on Sunday to actually put in something of the army so into the contest. But since we have a lot of pieces actually sort of done as display pieces. Anything gaming related was basically kind of disqualified from the start. Not that we're not good, just not good enough to actually sort of take one of those three spots on the podium, right?
Yeah.
This year, sort of, as I said, it has nothing to do with being the best, all right? It's all about sort of your own level, all right? So anyone can actually enter the competition and actually sort of see to where they stand in terms of quality and try to improve from that for the following year, all right? So it's not anymore sort of trying to be sort of, let's say, Thierry Husserl from last year, where actually add the best of show. It's basically you bring your work and you receive an evaluation from that and actually you work trying to actually get better from the following year. So yeah, so if anyone can actually enter without fear of being this piece of utterly crushed by someone else, okay? So yeah, so if anyone that thought they didn't have the level last year or anything of that sort, the entire show is not about that anymore. So it's not cutthroat, it's basically sort of open format. You present what you want to present, and that's basically it, all right? So I don't want to see anyone being scared away. Yes, there is best of prices, but yeah, this shouldn't be stop people from actually entering the contest. So anyone actually sort of any level, feel free to come and actually present your stuff.
Probably boost participation with that.
Yeah, definitely. You definitely get more participation that way.
Yeah, last year I went, but I was participating on the Sunday and the War Machine tournament. And on Saturday night, you put up the first batch of photos, of pictures, on the Facebook of the Northern Defenders. And I saw Thierry's troll. So I knew from the start that I wouldn't win. But I went anyway. Because I had something else to do. But since now you can turn that into an open format, more people would participate knowing that they fight against themselves.
I just remember seeing Thierry Serge piece last year. I was busy sort of doing paperwork on the table, and the first thing I noticed, an orc that appeared right in my face. I didn't see Thierry yet. I'm basically my judge, Rob, I was like, oh, Thierry is here. And I basically sort of looked up, and there he was. But I was still in the mind, so basically sort of hoping to get a few nice pieces, mostly for picture purposes, and actually do some publicity. When I said that, and then the Space Marine, and actually the Mountain King, I was like, okay, I'm golden for next. So I got enough stuff to actually play with in terms of publicity without actually posting something with Brybrush. But yeah, no, it's, as I said, sort of feel free to come in. It's not as customary as it used to be. It's basically a nice occasion for people to chat around. Something else which is different from last year, sort of, which basically is in regards to the players in the tournament. The $15 per participant is no matter if you're playing in a tournament or not. Basically, the contest is now its own independent sort of financial entity. So there's no distinction whether or not you're playing a tournament or not. So basically, yeah, there you go. And second of all, we won't be accepting pieces that you need to play in your armies.
Yeah, you judge that during the night or something like that, so people could play.
Well, we started during lunch time on Sunday, trying to take the pictures, stuff like that. It was a real nightmare last year. And, well, I kind of expected it to be, but we kind of decided still to do it. But yeah, this year, this is over. Either you actually put it in the contest, or actually you play with it, but you won't be able to do both.
Painting competition do that. There's a limit to the hardship of a painting judge.
Sorry to cut you off, Mitzi, but I mean, most places that do it, you're entering your models on, say, the Friday at the event or whatever, and you're picking them up on the Sunday. You know, once you hand them in, they're gone until that Sunday. So it's unreasonable, I think, to expect to be able to play with a model and enter it for an evaluation, right?
Yeah, well, the last 2 years were kind of nice to people. We tried to actually generate ways to get more entries into the cabinet to actually incite people to actually do participate as well. But yeah, this year, just in terms of logistics, we can't keep doing this.
No, and it's you not won't need it. You had enough entries last year. This year, well, yeah, the contest has been announced since almost April last year, something like that.
So, I've been pushing Dominic since last year. Like, give me the dates. Yeah, sort of. That's the only thing. I would love to be able to actually walk out Sunday, March 8th, and be able to say, like, next year, these are the dates, and there we go. But yeah, sort of, I'm not the one in charge of everything, so I still have to wait for the dates. But yeah, the sooner, the best, just make sure people have time to start preparing, managing the trip as well. Because yeah, sort of, local people, we'd be able to travel without too much problems. But trying to get people from the States and hopefully Europe eventually, sort of, these needs to be planned in advance.
Yes. Well, I think that probably sums it up.
I think awesome. So.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Mathieu.
So I want to see PCs from each single one of you in March in Quebec.
I won't be there, but now that you have added that we can send other people with my pieces, I'll try to have something in.
Oh, jeez. You won't be there just because you have a newborn baby on the way.
Yeah, I'll be in the. I'll probably be in the hospital at that time.
Any excuse is good, Antoine. Right? Any excuse is good.
So I guess I'm going to be the messenger, and I'm going to be bringing lots of mini from everybody.
So is there a maximum number of pieces that Steve can enter for other people?
No, as I said, as long as he's got $15 per participant, the rest I don't really care.
Okay, that's fine. Then he'll have some stuff.
All right, maybe I'll start painting something now in the hopes that I can get something decent by then. All right. So, well, Mathieu, again, thank you very much for being here.
A pleasure.
It was great to have you on. And like I said, I definitely want to talk to you in the future. And I want to do I want to try to organize something with you in Montreal for a painting class. I'd actually was under the impression you're no longer doing classes. But if you're saying you are, well, then maybe
I'm no longer actively seeking to organize them. But anyone actually sort of basically doing all the organization work for me, sort of, I am open to do it. Basically, I'm open on the format as well. I'm open on the content of the class. It's basically all on the discussion basis.
All right.
So talk to me. We'll see what can be done, and that's basically it.
Okay, because as you may have heard, we just recently organized a class with another well-known painter, Meg Maples. So we were thinking of trying to do something maybe quarterly or every 6 months. So we thought it'd be really awesome, get you on board, someone famous, someone local, and someone with a broad range of talents. You could bring a lot to the class. It'd be really cool to have you.
Sure.
Yeah, it's an opportunity we don't want to miss.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll definitely be touching base with you in the future.
Wonderful.
Excellent. Well, again, thanks for coming on board, and hopefully
we'll
speak
to you
soon.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
Hopefully. Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. All right, guys, so that was Mr. Fontaine, so we're just going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and close up the show. Thanks, guys. And we're back, guys. And that pretty much wraps up the show. I just want to take a moment to thank B. Steve and Yom Le Machine for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Always a pleasure.
Really? Always?
Well, most of the time. I love being outnumbered 3-1. It's okay.
Do you really feel it? Like, we all speak English. We all bend to your will.
Yeah, but you all bend to my will, but I know you're all thinking in French. So.
That explains the lag.
I'm so going to get killed here. Okay, again, thanks for coming, guys. It's always a pleasure. And that's it. I think you had a shout out, though, Yo.
Yeah, I wanted to give a word for our friends at Lost Hemisphere, who once again this year at TempleCon in February, they're running a charity raffle to get funds for to fight Alzheimer. They're running a charity event at TempleCon. They're looking for donations, so anything, hobby-related. Like last year, I gave Alexia, a unit of Alexia in the Risen for War Machine.
Yeah, you painted that beautiful unit. Yeah.
This year, I'm also giving stuff, so... It's just like people will buy tickets and the money will go to the Hope Alzheimer's Center. And a part of the money and then the other part will go just for research on Alzheimer.
Well, maybe so, I should go through the secret room and find
stuff. Yeah, if you have some extra stuff, I mean, they will always appreciate that.
I'm sure I can find extra stuff if I try, even a little bit.
To get rid of, but no, it's for a good cause. I mean, I don't know if you have to dealt with Alzheimer in your family, but I have and it's a bad.
I've known several people with Alzheimer's, so it's a terrible disease. And this is going to sound horrible. If it just killed someone, it would be a lot better, but it takes them away in pieces.
Yeah, in pieces.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Right. It's tough to deal with. Mm. So, a terrible disease. So anything anything I can do to help, I'll definitely have to give them something for the raffle.
So just go on the website / blog, I don't know. Or contact them at Gdeblauk, it's Gdaybloke, at lostemisphere.com.
Okay, so
it'll take probably anything that you want to send his way.
Anything.
Hobby related.
Right, okay. Well, that's good to know. So, folks, check that out. Help fight Alzheimer's. It's a good cause. So I guess that wraps up another episode. So, that's about it. See you in 2 weeks.
Bye, geeks.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Read our blog at geeksofthenorth.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth. Or follow us on Twitter at geeksofthenorth. You can follow me, Paul, on Twitter at PRFilio. And Antoine at Eltonio Berg. See you in 2 weeks, geeks.
This podcast is a proud member of the GeekCast Network. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other podcasts with a geek culture slant, head over to geekcastnetwork.com, where you will find podcasts such as All Us Geeks, a podcast that discusses board games, movies, television, comics, Kickstarter, and many other forms of geek culture. The GeekCast Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at geekcastnetwork.com.